This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest Peter Bergen has written a new book about Osama bin Laden and the Al-Qaeda network called Holy War, Inc. Bergen is CNN's terrorism analyst. He and Peter Arnett interviewed Osama bin Laden for CNN in 1997, the year after bin Laden issued his first call to Muslims to attack U.S. military targets. In 1983, after the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, Bergen made a documentary about the millions of Afghan refugees crossing the border into Pakistan. In 1993, he traveled to Afghanistan to explore the links between the Mujahideen, the CIA-funded Afghan rebels who fought the Soviets, and the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center. I asked Peter Bergen what he thinks the Northern Alliance's victories in Mazar-i-Sharif and Kabul will mean for bin Laden.
Well, it can't be good news for bin Laden, right? I mean, the advance of the Northern Alliance was rather swift. And, I've interviewed Hakmat Shah Massoud, the now dead leader of the Northern Alliance. I've also interviewed Dr. Abdullah, the foreign minister of the alliance. And they both had very much the same views about bin Laden and the Afghan Arabs, his followers in general. Even in the early 90s, Massoud was saying, we don't need these Arabs in Afghanistan. They did their job in the holy war against the Soviet Union during the 80s. Their services are no longer required. We want them to leave. And Dr. Abdullah, I interviewed about a year ago, and he was he regards bin Laden as a deathly threat. And of course, the Northern Alliance has been, because bin Laden and the Taliban were fighting together, the Northern Alliance has had a strong interest in bin Laden and his Arab fighters. And they are very much opposed. How quickly the fact that they've taken Kabul and how quickly that means, perhaps the death or the capture of bin Laden, I think that's still a long way off.
The Pakistani journalist Hamid Mir recently interviewed bin Laden, and Hamid Mir says that bin Laden said that he has nuclear and chemical weapons that he could use to retaliate against the United States if we used such weapons against him. What information do you have about the nuclear or chemical weapons that Al-Qaeda may have?
Let me review briefly what bin Laden has done in the past. We know that bin Laden's group was willing to pay $1.5 million for a bomb-grade uranium when the group was based in Sudan in the mid-90s. It's not clear if that transaction ever happened, but they made very serious inquiries together with the Sudanese military to buy this stuff. Secondly, bin Laden has repeatedly said that it's not a crime for Muslims to acquire these kinds of weapons. And then we've seen him saying that he does have this kind of capability. Also, you think about where Afghanistan is in the world. It's just south of the former republics of the republics of the former Soviet Union, with a lot of leaky reactors there, a lot of scientists who are not being paid. It's quite possible that nuclear material might have gone to bin Laden. I know from my own reporting on the subject, which I detail somewhat in my book, that in 1997 I was approached by an Afghan through an intermediary who said that he had nuclear materials for sale. I was doing a story on the whole question of the the former Soviet Union and the nuclear materials that might be coming from there. They gave me some serial numbers on the container that was supposed to contain this material. The serial numbers didn't check out. It was apparently a hoax. But nonetheless, whatever this Afghan was selling was causing him health problems, according to the intermediary. So there's plenty of uranium waste, or like even hospital waste, which has uranium content, which is floating around in that part of the world. So I think it would be wishful thinking of the First Order to assume that he doesn't have some kind of capability. Now, of course, to make a nuclear weapon, you know, nation states spend hundreds of millions of dollars and have huge cadres of scientists trying to create nuclear weapons. States like Iraq still don't have stuff that could be effectively weaponized. So the notion that he has a nuclear weapon, I think, is unlikely. What he certainly has, in my view, and I think you'd have to be very, very, very naive to assume he doesn't, is some ability to create what's known as a dirty nuclear bomb, which is basically a truck bomb with some sort of low-level nuclear waste. It's not a weapon that would kill a lot of people, but if you blew up that kind of thing, it would disperse over a wide area. It would be certainly a very effective terror weapon. And to go into your question on chemical weapons, We also know that the group has experimented in kind of an amateur way with chemical weapons. As recently as 2 or 3 years ago, the members of Al-Qaeda, Bin Laden's organization, were injecting, in one of the training camps, were injecting dogs with cyanide. They were taking dogs and putting them into containers with cyanide gas and sulfuric acid. Obviously, the dogs died. The idea, according to the testimony of somebody who was in those camps, is that the cyanide gas would be introduced into the air intake of U.S. government buildings. So, again, you've seen a sort of amateur attempt to use these weapons. But you'll remember Amsham Rikyo, which was the Japanese sort of cult. They had tens of millions of dollars and a whole cadre of scientists experimenting with chemical weapons. When they actually deployed sarin gas in the Tokyo subway station some years ago, they only killed a few people. So it's very, Bin Laden doesn't have a sort of cave in Afghanistan with hundreds of scientists working on these things. I think they have some capability. I don't think it's enormous.
You know, the way I read his response to Hamid Mir about nuclear and chemical weapons is that, you know, his group has weapons like that that they could use in retaliation if we use them against him. Is it your interpretation that he's saying he has these weapons, but he'd only use them if we use them first?
Well, that's what the interview appears to say. But I sort of think with Bin Laden, to a certain extent, all bets are off. One of the disturbing things about the videotape that first surfaced on October 7th, the night of the aerial assaults, the first aerial assaults by the United States against Afghanistan, Bin Laden references, not for the first time and nor the last time, about how America has used nuclear weapons and killed hundreds of thousands of civilians. Since Bin Laden's statements have tended to be the best guide to his actions, this is kind of a disturbing statement in the context of only a six-minute videotape. To me, it seems that, the worst-case scenario, and I think after the events of September 11th, you don't have to be alarmist to take the worst-case scenario, is that Bin Laden has something up his sleeve. And the fact that he's referencing these kinds of, in his view, you know, the United States has killed a lot of civilians, therefore he can do whatever he wants. If indeed he does have this kind of dirty nuclear weapon, I'm afraid to say that it's well within his, I think it's well within the modus operandi of the group to deploy it at a certain point. I'm not saying in this country, but I'm saying perhaps against an American target in some other country around the world.
Do you think that Bin Laden is behind the anthrax attacks, or do you think that that has a chance of being American homegrown terrorism?
The most disturbing aspect of the anthrax story is that nobody has a clue. You know, I mean, the United States government is sort of on the record in a lot of different ways, basically saying we just don't know, and that's true. That's true today. Bin Laden had the opportunity, by the way, this past weekend, to say that he had some biological capacity, and he didn't mention it. So
he just mentioned nuclear and chemical.
That's correct. So to me, that was a significant omission. You know, weaponizing anthrax to the degree that it apparently was in the instances we've seen is, again, the act of you have to have a pretty sophisticated lab. So, I mean, I think the jury is very much out. Although, I mean, the only thing we can add to the, you know, to what's known is, I think, Bin Laden's own statements, this omission of the biological component, I think, was significant because he had an opportunity to say that and he didn't.
The Bush administration asked TV stations not to run over and over the tapes that Bin Laden makes, in which he or a spokesperson speaks. And the reason why was that there might be secret messages somehow encoded into the video. Do you know of any secret messages that have ever been encoded into a video?
I don't. And the thing that struck me as odd about that is, I mean, it seems to me the message is very uncoded. It's go and kill Americans. I mean, it's pretty obvious what the message is anyway. But I'm not aware that, he may communicate like that, but I think it's much more general than that. I mean, it's not necessary. People already understand what if they're part of the group, that's what you're supposed to be doing anyway. And I don't. It's very hard for me to comment because they say that, but there's really no proof either way. It's certainly never come up as a, for instance, in the embassy bombing trial, there were, tens and tens and thousands of pages of court filings, and there was no indication of that was the way that he communicated.
My guest is CNN's terrorism analyst, Peter Bergen. His new biography of Bin Laden is called Holy War, Inc. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Peter Bergen is my guest. He's the terrorism analyst for CNN and author of the new book, Holy War, Inc., Inside the Secret World of Osama bin Laden. Bin Laden is the son of Mohammed bin Laden, and Mohammed bin Laden is the founder of a very successful construction company in Saudi Arabia. The family renovated the two holy shrines of Mecca and Medina, and I believe they renovated the royal palace as well. Now, Osama bin Laden's father, Mohammed bin Laden, died in a plane crash when Osama was 10 years old. I just find it very interesting that Osama bin Laden is behind using passenger planes as weapons and has promised that the storm from the skies would continue. And meanwhile, his father was killed in a plane crash. I'm not sure what that means, but there's some kind of...
I'm not sure
something
what it means
going
either.
On there. Yeah?
But, you know, but Osama's father died in a plane crash, and then his oldest brother, Salem, who died in a plane crash actually in Texas in 1988, and he was piloting an ultralight plane which hit some power lines. So both his father and then his older brother die in the plane crashes, and of course there are, you know, these plane hijackings. I mean, I'm not sure what it means either, but it's a sort of theme. And also destroying buildings is also a theme. I mean, here's a man who he spends much of his life, you know, building. His father builds up this huge company which is in the construction business, and then bin Laden spends a lot of his life demolishing various buildings. Again, I'm not sure what it means, but it is a theme running through his life.
Where does Osama bin Laden fit into the bin Laden family? We know a little bit about his father. What do you know about his mother?
Well, he's very close to his mother still. His mother visited him as recently as would have been earlier. But one of bin Laden's sons was married earlier this year, and bin Laden's mother, who is Syrian, was actually at the wedding. So they keep in fairly close contact. And bin Laden's mother also visited him when he was living in the Sudan in the mid-90s. So his mother, I've heard from people who are allowed to talk. The family, by the way, is very hard to talk to. But somebody sort of authorized to speak to me said, look, the family doesn't consider her part of the family. She was divorced from Osama's father a long time ago. Osama's father had many wives. You're only allowed four at once under Islam. But he had more than that, although he kept to the notion of only keeping four at once. But, you know, bin Laden is the only son of this particular mother. He has two full sisters. So the family is a large one. There are several hundred members at this point. I mean, I take them as sort of at their word when they say that we reject bin Laden and he's the sort of effectively the black sheep of the family. But, you know, with such a large family, they're clearly sort of competing interests. And I think it's generally the view that certain elements of the family continue to support him both morally and perhaps even financially.
The bin Laden family business, and this isn't Osama bin Laden, this is the other members of the family, they're involved in many, many businesses. Just give us a sense of what the bin Laden group has made its money on.
Well, principally it's construction. And if you look at some of the things they've done, I mean, they're rebuilding airports in Cairo and Aden and Yemen. They're building Hyatts in, I think, Kuala Lumpur. These are huge construction projects. You know, they're hotels, they're renovating airports, but they moved beyond that core construction business they diversified into pretty much, an unbelievable number of other things. I mean, one of the family members said that, you know, they have an interest in the Hard Rock Cafe in the Middle East. They don't take money from any drink alcohol profits, but they do have an interest in that. By their own description on their website, which is now down, they had the license for Snapple drinks in the Middle East. They also had Volkswagen, Porsche, even Disney. They had some rights to turn Disney features into Arabic, telecommunications. Motorola had a ultimately ill-fated venture to set up something called the Iridium system, which was 66 satellites around the world. You could make a phone call anywhere in the world with a handheld phone. One of bin Laden's brothers sits on the board. And, you know, it even extends to the United States. So one of Salem bin Laden, who is Osama's oldest brother, made his business partner in the United States was a man by the name of James Barth, a Houston entrepreneur who bought various pieces of Houston real estate for Salem bin Laden. And this man, James Barth, is actually a friend of President George Bush from his time when they were both in the Texas National Guard in the 60s. So, I mean, I'm not saying there's, you know, it's just interesting. There's 6 degrees of separation there between the president and Osama bin Laden. But it shows the extent of where this company has, you know, real estate in Texas and New Jersey. It's a very big company.
How was bin Laden radicalized, and who were his mentors?
Well, bin Laden has said that his father said that one of his sons would fight against the enemies of Islam. And in bin Laden's view, he's the one son that is doing that. And it's interesting that bin Laden has been influenced by a number of older, religiously radical men, principally Abdullah Azzam, who was a very well-known Islamic scholar who sort of created the first international modern jihadist network, if you will. He was the guy who was bin Laden's sort of senior colleague in the effort to recruit Muslims from around the world to come and fight the Soviet Union in Afghanistan during the 80s. So Abdullah Azzam was an important mentor. And then number two is the person that we've seen step into the limelight a little bit recently is Ayman al-Zawahiri, who is apparently quite skilled surgeon who comes from a rather prominent Egyptian family. He has been basically a sort of revolutionary stroke terrorist since 1973 when he founded Egypt's jihad group, which has been very narrowly devoted to trying to overthrow the Egyptian state. That group was involved in the assassination of President Anwar Sadat in 1981. And Ayman al-Zawahiri identified the United States as an enemy apparently quite early on. He has had a critical role in terms of influencing bin Laden. I talked to many, many different people who all said the same thing. Ayman al-Zawahiri is, you know, they use words like brain, you know, he's in Osama bin Laden's brain or his mind. Certainly, Ayman al-Zawahiri had a very important role to play. And it's interesting that, you know, just after the events of September 11th, Ayman al-Zawahiri appeared on the video with bin Laden and really, for the first time, spoke to the world. And I think up hitherto was a pretty unknown figure.
You say that al-Zawahiri seems to be the brains behind the operation. From the little that you've spoken to bin Laden and the much that you've heard and read about him, do you think he's smart?
I think he's smart. I mean, I thought that on September 10th. I mean, he his range of references in these various statements he makes, he's clearly well-read and somewhat well-read in Islamic history. He's not a religious scholar in the strict Islamic sense of the word, but he's certainly, you know, a bright guy. My concern is that he has some game plan beyond what we've seen already, because the actions that we've seen so far suggest an understanding of what was going to happen. I mean, first of all, the assassination of Ahmad Shah Massoud, the most effective anti-Taliban leader. There's no natural leader of the Northern Alliance right now with the absence of Massoud, and that was clearly an assassination attempt engineered by bin Laden, I think. And then secondly, the fact that he has all these videotapes ready suggests that he also understood that there was going to be a propaganda element to this war and he needed to get his message out. The question is, has he thought through, you know, is the fall of Kabul a huge surprise to him? I mean, it was a surprise to everybody else that it happened so quickly. But I do think that he has a game plan beyond where we are right now.
Do you have any idea how close Osama bin Laden is with Mullah Omar, the head of the Taliban?
I think they're definitely close, but there's been a lot of misreporting about, there was a widely circulated rumor that they were somehow related by marriage, and I talked to a number of Taliban cabinet officials, and they all universally said that was not true. And in fact, bin Laden just this past weekend was asked that same question directly, and he also said it was not the case. But he is very close to Mullah Omar, but I think it's very important to understand Mullah Omar has the ability to end this war tomorrow, because bin Laden has sworn bayat, which is an oath of allegiance to Mullah Omar. And on a video that was circulating this summer, he exactly refers to Mullah Omar. Bin Laden refers to Mullah Omar as commander of the faithful, which is an important title, suggesting that bin Laden really looks to Mullah Omar as sort of the leader. And so I think that Mullah Omar could turn bin Laden over if he wanted to. I don't think it's very likely, for several reasons. One, bin Laden has contributed men and money to the Taliban cause. Two, they're ideologically similar and obviously quite close personally. And three, there is a very important concept. The Pashtuns, who are the Taliban, you know, they make up the majority of the Taliban, subscribe to something called Pashtun Wali, which is a tribal code of conduct, which puts enormous premium on the concepts of giving hospitality to people, and also giving refuge to people who seek your refuge. And that's, a Taliban official said this interesting anecdote to me. He said, look, during World War II, there were a number of Germans who were in Afghanistan, and the Allies were very keen for them to be handed over. They were non-Muslims, and we didn't turn them over. So, you know, we're not going to turn over bin Laden. He's our guest. You know, we admire him, etc. Now, maybe that'll change if there is a sort of spectacular Taliban defeat. But I think there's going to be an element of the Taliban that's going to continue fighting to the end. The Taliban was never a monolithic movement. It was made up of former communists, people who switched sides when they saw the tide was going in the Taliban's favor, who will switch back. But nonetheless, there is this hardcore, I think, that I don't think surrender is part of their vocabulary.
Well, Peter Bergen, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Peter Bergen is CNN's terrorism analyst. His new biography of bin Laden is called Holy War, Inc. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.